evening and welcome to the David Rightwing Show. This is a social political commentary with a conservative focus. This is our first episode. It features myself and Brian Belcourt of the Brian Belcourt Show. The reason I am recording this intro separate from the actual show is because we ran into a little bit of an issue with our mics. So let's get it going. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave, for having me on. It's great to come on. I am also a conservative here at U of M. I am the editor-in-chief of the Morris North Star, and I do host the Brian Belcourt Show on YouTube, Spotify, and iTunes.
Alrighty, once again, Brian, it's great to have you on the show. Today, we're going to be talking about a recap of the events of this week's, or this previous weekend's, Conservative Political Action Conference put on by the American Conservative Union. The idea of America versus socialism, which was brought up at the conference, and today's primary elections. So for those that don't know, CPAC is a yearly gathering of conservative influencers in historic Washington, D.C. This year, Brian and I were fortunate enough to be able to attend this event with the University of Minnesota Morris College Republicans, which I also serve as the vice president of. So some notable speakers in attendance this year included chairman of the American Conservative Union, Matt Schlapp, and some speakers, Glenn Beck, Michael Knowles, Mark Levin, Sebastian Gorka, Brandon Straka, who will be talked about later, Vice President of the United States, Mr. Mike Pence, and President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. So, Brian, I'd like to ask, who was your favorite speaker that we saw this week?
I would say by far my favorite speaker was President Trump. I mean, it's always, no matter what political affiliation you have, it's always great to see a sitting president speak when they're president. I mean, I've said this before, I've seen him once before, and I even said if Obama was president, I'd love to see him speak, just because it's the whole feel of, like, the leader of the free world speaking. But Trump was definitely my favorite speaker. I did enjoy Mark Levin, as well as Brandon Straka, who you mentioned we'll get to eventually, but those are some of my favorite, and I just like the overall aspect, the socialism versus America theme, because it's so prevalent now with Bernie Sanders running and most likely getting the nomination. I don't think so, but just that whole concept of we need to stop socialism in its tracks before it hurts America like it has these other countries such as Venezuela.
And that's a great point. I also agree. President Trump was my favorite speaker as well. The amount of energy that he brought into the room, people were on their feet most of the time that he was speaking, and that was for an hour and a half cheering. I actually wound up hoarse that day. But yeah, it was a great speech, and same goes for Mike Pence, I would say, too. He pointed out a lot of the things, especially that the media forgets to point out. A lot, they don't give him credit for.
No, and I agree. I think Mike Pence was a really good speaker. I mean, that's where you're going to get with Pence and Trump. You're going to get Trump is going to be the guy that's going to appeal to the more of the wider voting base of the Republican Party, the everyday average American. And Pence, you're going to get it how it's told, the facts, straight to the point, the more professional of the two. Not saying either is bad. I'm just saying that Pence, you're going to get more of that strict, by-the-book speech, and he's going to really tell you how it is, and Trump's going to be the more of the entertainer and the person who's going to appeal to that Republican Party.
Yeah, get him off the stage. For those that weren't watching the talk that President Trump gave this weekend, he had a pretty great line making fun of Mike Bloomberg, one of the Democratic candidates. So, Brian, I'd like to ask, which topics do you think are the most important going back to a small town campus here in rural Minnesota like we are right now?
I would definitely think it's when you go, I think it's the whole idea of tolerance, really. I mentioned last night, we have on a campus such as ours who definitely leans more left than maybe even most campuses. I definitely feel like tolerance is an issue where conservatives are definitely viewed as more of, we have to be tolerant to the other views that we don't believe in necessarily, which isn't a bad thing, but it seems to only go in one direction. I don't think that the left really has to be tolerant of our ideas, but we have to be tolerant of theirs. And I do think that's where we run into a lot of issues on campus. And until we move past the point of being tolerant as a one-way street, I don't think we're ever going to be able to truly find that middle ground where we can all come together and really talk about ideas, which college is supposed to be for.
And for those who are here on campus,
I will be actually writing an article. It will come out next week in this month's issue of the North Star, talking about the tolerance here on campus. So for me, I think it was the topic of socialism, especially given that we have a proclaimed socialist in today's Democratic Party. He's actually leading in a lot of polls. Most people don't seem to see what the issue is with socialism, but we will get onto that here in a little bit. All right. And Brian, did you see that there were any other events that happened in D.C. that helped demonstrate the divide that politics has created?
There's definitely, you can always see protests, and it definitely creates that divide. When you speak on these type of issues, it's always going to create the divide, but you have to work around it. You have to make sure you have that tolerance towards another person's view, because you're never going to be able to truly understand someone if you're always shouting them down and if you don't let them speak. I think that's why CPAC was such a great event, because it really did let you, it opened up you to, because you had people from a wide variety of the spectrum of conservative hosts. I mean, you had, for example, you had Glenn Beck, who is a supporter of Trump, but he definitely is a critic of him in some certain cases. But you also had people who are very pro-Trump. But you definitely got that wide variety, and I think it's very important that, especially as conservatives and everybody on the political spectrum, to really look at all the variety of ideas on the political spectrum. That way you're able to understand where people are coming from, and then you can find that middle ground. And that's where you get the whole working together in like a bipartisanship nature, which we really need in this time of political climate.
Yep, and that's a great point. Talking about, this was something that was mentioned in the College Republican meeting last night, is this idea of we need moderation. We don't need extreme solutions from either side, especially in terms of things such as healthcare, where Bernie Sanders has proposed Medicare for all, which that is an extreme Democratic view, which would just be repealed the next time a conservative is elected.
Right, and I think there's definitely issues where you definitely want to take more of a conservative or a liberal point of view, no matter which side you're on. But I don't think issues such as healthcare or Social Security or those issues like that are those ones where you want to, just because they're such hot button issues and they can easily divide the bases. So I think you really need to take more of a moderate approach, especially when it comes to an issue like healthcare.
Yep, and I completely agree. And especially if you look at other countries that have this form of socialized healthcare, such as Canada. In Canada, in order to see a specialist, it can take up to 18 weeks, whereas here in the United States, the average is 2.5 weeks.
Right, and you see it in the... I'm not saying that Republicans have the answer to healthcare. I mean, it's obvious that no one really has the answer to healthcare, and I don't think fighting not having the answer and fighting that with socialized medicine is the answer. I mean, you look at it right now, 2/3 of the Democratic Senate don't even want Medicare for all. They don't support it. In Canada, I mean, 67% of their population choose the private option, even though they have Medicare for all. Just like in Denmark, 42% of them choose the private option, and 31% of them choose a supplemental plan. It's not popular, and it's definitely of a far left view that I definitely think isn't right for America, and we need to really sit down and take a more bipartisan approach when it comes to healthcare.
Yeah, and just to point out some of the other issues with socialized healthcare, you can look at countries such as, well, looking back at Canada, we had a speaker over the weekend at CPAC. He had a friend who had broken his ankle, and because it wasn't deemed an emergency, he was bedridden for 18 months. Wound up with a whole bunch of bed sores, which wound up gangrenous, and the infection kept him off his feet for another 2 years, in which the infection had spread so far as to the point where he had to have his leg cut off. Sebastian Gorka also went on to talk about the death of his mother in Budapest, Hungary. They didn't have the ability to get the gurney, because she had hurt herself in her apartment, and they couldn't get a gurney up the stairs, so she had to be walked down. She had a broken hip, and they put her in the hospital for 6 days. And on the sixth day, Gorka's wife went in and spoke to her, and she talked about how it was hard for her to breathe and it was hot. The next day, Gorka's mother had passed away. And these are the issues that, And it'd be different if this was like a once in a long while that an issue like this were to happen. But this is a common occurrence in countries with socialized medicine.
Right, and you don't even have to look at countries like, I mean, yes, obviously Canada and other countries that have socialized medicine is a good example. And I mean, I'm not discrediting it at all. I think it's a really good example because of the fact that they have implemented it and it has gone so poorly. But you can even look at a recent example in the United States, Vermont, considered one of the wealthiest states, if not the wealthiest state in the country. They tried to implement socialized medicine. They tried to implement Medicare for All, but it didn't work. The plan would have called for a 160% tax increase, and it was shot down immediately. Now imagine that on a wider scale of all 50 states. When the wealthiest state in the country can't do it, what makes you think that all 50 states are going to be able to do it?
Exactly. All right, we're going to move on to our next topic, and this is the topic of America versus socialism, which we've already covered a little bit today. So, Brian, what do you think has led to this moment where we currently have this proclaimed socialist as a Democratic delegate this year?
I just really think it appeals to young people. I think that we're growing up in a generation where we're told that we can have whatever we want. We're deemed that we can, we're just given things, and we're for like the participation era, I guess you can call it. And I really think that by doing that, you're creating this generation of young people who just feel they're entitled to things when they're not. No one's entitled to other people's money that these people earn, these CEOs earn. I understand that it's a fun idea to say, let's tax the rich at 70, 80, 90% and take their money, because who needs that much money? But they earned it. We shouldn't be taking money away from people who earned their money to give to people who didn't earn their money and who are, frankly, not contributing all that much to society.
And, yeah, I 100% agree. Yeah, it seems like a lot of these young people, that's the one reason why Bernie Sanders is such a, he's such a scary delegate, because he has the young person vote, which we haven't seen a large quantity of young people vote in elections in previous years. Moving on to this next question, what do you think the American public doesn't realize about socialism that these delegates that are preaching these socialist views haven't brought to the table?
I don't think they don't know anything in particular about it. I think they see these examples in, such as Venezuela or China as an example, of these socialist countries that try to implement socialism. And I just think they don't think it can happen here. They're told all these fairy tales and these good stories about what it could be and what it can be, but they refuse to provide examples of actual places where it's worked. I mean, Bernie Sanders loves to trout out the fact that Denmark is a socialist country, but their president has repeatedly said, please don't call us that, we're not a socialist country. So it's really, I encourage people when they're told that, well, it could work here, I want you to ask them, give me an example. Give me one example where a socialist economy has helped and flourished in an economy, and they can give it to you.
Yeah, and that's a very important thing to remember. And even, like you mentioned, the prime minister of Denmark, the Danish prime minister, has gone on the record, Lars Løkke Rasmussen, has talked about how Denmark is not a socialist country, but a free market economy. They also mentioned that Denmark is also higher ranked on the Freedom Index.
Right, and it all comes back to that thing where they like to, where Bernie's not really challenged. That's what I think you have. It comes back to an issue where you have these debates, and I think we're on, what are we on, number like 11 for the Democratic debates this year, but not one has been on a network besides MSNBC or CNN or ABC. They're all on these more left-leaning networks, and you really don't get challenges to these points. And no credit goes to the moderator of the debate, and I think you have to wonder, in a way, why other candidates aren't calling out these issues. You've seen it a little bit, but I really think that if candidates really wanted to stop Bernie, that they need to be pushing him on these ideas of, why are you saying Denmark is a socialist country when they've repeatedly said they're not, and things like that. I really think that candidates need to push back on him on that those issues. And I really think you saw that in a way when you had two candidates, Pete Buttigieg, who dropped out, and Amy Klobuchar, two candidates who I think Amy is definitely the lesser of the two, but she endorsed Biden, and Pete, who was in third place, actually, and he dropped out, but he endorsed Biden as well. It really does tell you where the more moderate-leaning people are going with their endorsement over Bernie, and they're really going towards Biden.
So before we move on to talking about these current delegates in the primaries, let's point out some of the flaws in these socialist countries, because we constantly see countries like Venezuela, Cuba. Venezuela was actually one of the wealthiest countries in the world until about 2-3 decades ago.
Right.
And yeah, because what people don't realize is socialism, yeah, they think it's equitable and makes everybody equal, but at the end of the day, it's just the equal sharing of pain.
Well, the reason why these socialist programs are so popular is it's because it's giving something. They think it's free when it's really not. The taxes are being raised on the middle class. They're going up, and you're really creating this incentive to not work, in a sense. Like, when you give socialized medicine to everybody, it's obviously it's lesser quality, it's more wait times, as we've seen in Canada. But you're really, and then you have people who argue that, well, if you give socialized medicine to everybody, it's going to boost the economy because they're going to have one less thing to worry about. And I don't see that as true at all. I think that almost relies on the good in people when you can't base policy off relying on the good in people. I think you have to look at it as the fact, well, by giving this socialized medicine to people, you're going to create a disincentive to actually go out and earn it. I definitely don't think right now the prices are where they should be. I think there's a lot of flaws in the current system, but I don't think just handing people things is a good way to grow the economy. I think going out, tying up your boots, and going to work from 9 to 5 is a good way to boost the economy, and I don't think socialized medicine really encourages that.
Alrighty, thank you, sponsors. I'd like to recap. This is the David Rightwing Show. The views and opinions expressed on this radio program are those of the show's hosts and not necessarily those of KUMM or the University of Minnesota Morris. And just a reminder, I'm here with my good friend and host of the Brian Belcourt Show, Mr. Brian Belcourt himself. We're going to be going on to talk about some more of the downfalls of socialism. And Brian, when I think of socialism, I think of what the number of deaths caused by socialism, looking at Nazi Germany, Stalin, Mao. In just the last 100 years, we've had over 1 million dead just from socialism.
Right, and I don't know if socialism directly leads to that, but what it leads to more is that communist state. Socialism directly, when you implement socialism on a full scale in a country, it leads to this authoritarian communist state that then takes away rights of people. Because when you have more people relied on the government, that's when they start taking your rights because they know they're dependent on the government. That's what really scares me the most when you see people talking about all these government programs and how we have to rely so much on the government, but then you also have the same people talking about how we need to start outlawing hate speech. And that's where it gets tricky for me. And I feel like our rights are being taken away when we start talking more about socialism.
Yep, and that's actually a great segue into mentioning a speaker that is coming right here to the University of Minnesota Morris. We're having a man by the name of Jorge Galicia. He's an activist from Venezuela. He's going to be joining us on Thursday, April 16th at 7 p.m. We are working on getting the recital hall. If not, we will be moving to the Science Auditorium. And he is an asylum seeker here in the U.S. He's from Venezuela. Does a really good talk about what the government did to him and his family down in Venezuela. We're also working on hosting another speaker, Mr. Brandon Straka. Brian, you want to give us a quick intro to him?
Yeah, around 2017, early 2018, right before the midterms in 2018, Brandon Straka formed the Walk Away Movement on Twitter. And basically what it is he was a lifelong registered Democrat who decided after 2017 he really took a hard look at Just the state of the Democratic Party and the lies that there was holding in the media and everything like that. So he really formed the walkaway movement. According to the campaign's website, it encourages support of those on the left to walk away from the divisive tenets endorsed and mandated by the Democratic Party of today. What that really means is he's not telling you to necessarily walk away and join the Republican Party. Brandon, he is an open supporter of Trump now. But I don't think that's what it means. What he means by it is he's telling you, really look at what this party is really doing to America and what it's causing and what it's telling you, and really look and see if that's really the party that you want to be in. And that's kind of why the walkaway movement started. So we did see him speak at CPAC on Wednesday night, and then on Thursday he was at a booth and he talked to us about possibly, because he wants to really go to more college campuses. So he did express interest in coming to the campus, so I am in contact with him and his agency, and we're going to try to work something out hopefully for next year for him to come and give a little speech here on campus.
Awesome. And just to kind of let people know, if there's anybody that you would like to see here on campus that's a conservative speaker, be sure to shoot me an email. My email address is David, D-A-V-I-D, R-I-G-H-T-W-I-N-G at gmail.com. That's David Rightwing at gmail.com. But yeah, if there's anybody that you would like to see or any questions, comments on the show, be sure to shoot me an email. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. Facebook and YouTube, the David Rightwing Show, and then on Facebook at David Wing 5959. So let's go on to talk about today's Democratic primaries. Looks like we have five candidates so far. We've got Mini Mike Bloomberg, we got Pocahontas, Miss Warren,
Sleepy Joe. Joe Biden's up there still.
Yep, we got the big man, Bernie Sanders. And then who do we got? I kind of forgot her. Tulsi Gabbard, I think. Is she still out here? I don't know.
It's easy to forget about her when she's polling under 1%. So.
Wow, 1%, that is, wow. So, Brian, who do you think is going to be the nominee after all is said and done?
I really think we're really going towards a brokered convention, and that's what happens when you have such a wide variety of people still here on Super Tuesday. I mean, even last year on Super Tuesday for the in 2016 for the Democrats, you had two candidates, Bernie and Hillary. But when you have five candidates, six candidates, seven candidates like they had on Sunday still, you're really pushing towards that brokered convention, because, like, look at it now. You've had the Iowa caucus, you've had the New Hampshire primary, the Nevada caucus, and then the South Carolina primary. And one of the candidates who dropped out won the Iowa caucus. So that's 26 delegates that Pete Buttigieg has that are supposed to go to Biden now because he endorsed him. So that's kind of like the unwritten rule, but the wider the variety of candidates are, the more delegates that are going to get split up, and I really think we're going towards more of a brokered convention. That being said, I really think the establishment Democratic Party and kind of more of the moderate wing of the Democratic Party are really separating themselves from Bernie, and you saw that when Klobuchar and Buttigieg now endorsed Biden. I think it's going to be Biden. That's what I've been saying since 2016, the day after the election, and I'm sticking with it now. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was Bernie, but I'm sticking with Biden as my answer.
Sticking with Biden. Yeah, and I can understand that. Honestly, I don't know. I feel like if Biden does get the nomination, President Trump is guaranteed re-election, because just look at how often Biden messes up something that he says, or I mean, just last week he stated that he was running for Senate rather than running for the presidency. And actually earlier this week, he misquoted the Constitution directly. And that's actually something that we've kind of seen with a lot of these candidates, is they kind of fumble a little bit. If you looked at, like, the last debate, Bloomberg himself was acting like he had won the previous debate.
Right, and I mean, as you know, I mean, I'm not the biggest Trump supporter. I mean, we all have different views on that. And I really think, I don't think it's a guarantee that Trump wins in November if Biden's the candidate, just like I don't think it's a guarantee if Bernie gets the nominee, it's a guarantee for Trump. I do think it's going to be a close election. I don't think Bernie or Biden can beat Trump. But, I mean, look at 2016, Trump won. So, I mean, anything's possible. So I'm not saying they can't win. I'm saying I don't think they will. For me, Biden, I'm more worried about than Bernie. Simply because, not because of the whole aspect I'm saying, more because Biden, with Biden, you're going to get that more moderate vote. Because he's definitely one of the more moderate candidates on the stage. I don't think any of them are moderate, but I think he's definitely the most moderate of all of them left. So I really think that is what worries me, because you're going to have those diehard never Trumpers really look at Biden and think, well, he's not a socialist and he's not Trump. Might as well toss him my vote. That's where it gets a little dicey. I definitely think if it is Bernie, the path for Trump is kind of set in stone, and Bernie can kind of take a more lax approach when it comes to it. I think if Bernie is the nominee, Trump has got to win Florida. I think Florida is the number one priority for Trump. If Bernie's the nominee, it's really close right now in the head-to-head for those two. But I think without Florida, I really think Trump can't win the election.
Yep, that's understandable. And since you did mention Biden, I feel like we need to also point out Biden has been officially endorsed by Amy Klobuchar, who has suspended her campaign. We've also seen Steyer and Buttigieg also suspend their campaigns. Actually, I think Steyer completely dropped out. Was that a suspension or was that?
I think he dropped out. Okay. I do think he dropped out, because I don't think he didn't have any delegates, I don't think, anyway. I don't think he met the 15% threshold in South Carolina. So.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about Biden and Bernie, but what about the other B in there? What about Mr. Mini Mike, the guy that has... at least from what we've seen, is almost attempted to buy this election. Actually, I'd like to point out, his ads end today, thank God. what do you think about Mr. Mini Mike?
I'm not worried. I mean, I disagree with Trump on a lot of things, but I do agree with what he said in his speech on Saturday, when he said, you can't buy an election. Buying an election only gets you so far. At some point, you got to bring in the goods. I really don't think Mike is really offering anything different from the rest of the candidates who have been doing this since beginning, middle of last year, when Bloomberg just got in a few months ago. I really think it's difficult for a candidate like him to buy an election. I think when Mike got into the race, I really don't think he anticipated his past getting brought up like it has. I mean, you saw at the debate when it opened up with Warren accusing Bloomberg of what he said, and she made it sound like she was going to talk about Trump, but no, it's really Mayor Bloomberg. And I mean, I don't think he anticipated really all this stuff getting brought up in his past, and I really don't think I don't think Bloomberg's a factor at all.
Well, and do you think that Bloomberg is actually a Democrat? Because looking at his history, he has alternated between Democrat and Republican many different times.
I would say he's a more of an independent. I really think he definitely has a lot of Republican views, and he has a few views on definitely on the left, like far left. Like, I mean, especially when it comes to gun control. But I really think he's definitely an independent when it comes to that sense. And I think him trying to pass off as a Democrat really is sort of misleading to the American people, because I really don't think they know about his record on Republican issues.
Well, and also you can also look at people talking about how the Democrats are the party of average day Americans. But if you look at Mayor Mike Bloomberg, he's actually worth almost 10 times more than the current sitting president, who everybody seems to hate because he's a billionaire and doesn't need all that money. Bloomberg, I think the last time I looked, is worth around $60 billion.
Right. And I mean, I always find it funny, too, when all the left hates these old white men. They don't want these old white men. They want a more diverse candidacy. Well, the rest of the people on the stage are white. And you have the youngest candidate outside of Tulsi Gabbard, who, like I said, is polling under 1%, is Elizabeth Warren, who's 71 years old. So you're not really breaking away to have a more diverse candidacy, which I agree with. I really think we need – I don't think we should be forcing it, but I definitely think – that we should be encouraging a more diverse candidacy, and I really don't think they're living up to their what they preach, really.
Yeah, yeah. So, just going to pull up a couple of things really quick. So, looking at the current amount of delegates that have been awarded, it looks like we've got Bernie Sanders with 60 delegates, Joe Biden with 54, Mayor Pete, who's has suspended his campaign, has got 26, and then we have Elizabeth Warren with 8 and Amy Klobuchar with 7, and Klobuchar has also suspended her campaign, which also leads me to look at the rest of the current candidates, Bloomberg and Gabbard. Neither one has received any delegates. What's your take on that?
I really think at this point Bloomberg's more in it because I think he doesn't want to drop out because of the money he spent. And I really think when Bloomberg got into the race, he was hoping for the broker convention. He was hoping he'd be that option for them to pick, and nominate. And I really don't think that's really worked out for him. I think he's just kind of sticking in it now because he spent millions of dollars in Tulsi. I mean, she might as well just wait to drop out until after today because, I mean, what's her word going to do if she comes out, oh, I'm going to endorse Bernie? I mean, it's really not going to change much people's mind because she has such little support.
Yep, and I'm just going to look this up really quick because I don't want to be putting out fake news, but if I remember correctly, Bloomberg has actually spent around $500 million just on advertising in the short time that he has been running for office. And that really shows this idea of him attempting to buy the election, another old white guy trying to impose his values on the country.
Right, and it sets a bad precedent for future candidates, and I really think that I don't think the candidates on the stage did a good enough job calling him out on it. I think they talked about it a little bit, but I really don't think they really hit the core issue of what exactly he's trying to do. I mean, you can't watch a YouTube video without seeing a Bloomberg ad. You can't turn on the TV without seeing a Bloomberg ad. I mean, I'm sitting down watching TV, and I literally get two out of the three ads are Bloomberg ads, and the third one being a Steyer ad when he was still in the race. And I think that can only get you so far. I mean, you gotta, like Trump said, you gotta bring the goods if you wanna actually get people's votes.
Yep, and so now I've pulled up the New York Times. It looks like just for today is Super Tuesday. Just want to remind everybody, get out there and vote for your candidate. Make sure that your voice is heard. But it looks like just today, Bloomberg had reserved $41 million just to spend on advertising today alone.
Right, and it just goes to show you like what he's trying to do. One last thing I really wanted to touch on is kind of what David just said. Get out and vote. I mean, it's a primary, and it's really important to get out and vote, no matter who your candidate are, no matter what your political beliefs are, if you're left, right, just get out and vote. It's one of the best things that us as Americans have, one of the best rights that we have, to be able to go out and cast a vote for a candidate. And even if you're a Republican and you don't necessarily like Trump, go out and vote for the opposition. Let him know that he has to do things to get over win your vote over for November. Just go out and do your civic duty and vote, vote, vote.
Alrighty. Thank you, Brian, for being on the show. Be sure to stay tuned for the next hour. We're going to be playing some country classics and some classic rock. But yeah, like Brian said, get out there and vote. Make sure your voice is heard, because I can't tell you how many times I've heard either here on campus or back home people talking about how they don't feel like they're fairly represented.
This has been the David Rightwing Show. If you like this podcast, be sure to tune in next week where we talk about freedom of speech and censorship. In the meantime, be sure to check out my Facebook page at the David Rightwing Show, and be sure to check me out on Twitter at David Rightwing. Thank you, and have a great day.